Welcome to another edition of the Valley Edition. This week, it's my great pleasure to welcome on the phone from somewhere beyond the snowflakes falling here in downtown Palmer, Zaz Hollander.
Yes, hello everyone. In Hatcher Pass, where snow is also falling.
Ah, wonderful. And we have a recent report from our next panelist, Mark Kelsey. Welcome, Mark.
Good morning, Mike, Zaz, and Terry.
Yes, and Mark has come through the snow in here. And a little bit earlier, Terry, our third panelist, also came through the snow. Welcome, Terry.
From four blocks away, but who's counting?
Well, yeah. snow falls not quite equally on all of us. Well, talking about a variety of things happening this past week, I'd like to plunge into the consideration of the definition and the practice of town halling.
Now a verb.
I've made sure that it's a verb because I see, and I have in some respects observed how legislators, both from the national level as well as coming in at the local level, from Juneau, have variously handled town halls. And I'm curious. I've noticed that in the past we once had town halls that happened, but the congressional delegation, the three members who go to Washington D.C., seem to have all said no to town halls. Any comment or experience from any of you? Let's start with Terry.
Well, I haven't gone to any since they've really become so robust, or since this is kind of the recess for on the national end of things. There has been some in Palmer earlier, and they pretty much were the status quo of helter-skelter. Some people did them, some people showed up, some people didn't show up, but it was everybody piled in a room and people took turns. Some people took too long turns. Asking a question and sometimes getting an answer and sometimes just testifying. They're changing that apparently this weekend. It's going to be a Valley one at the Wesela Senior Center, and it's going to model pretty much what I've been hearing a lot of them, and it's roundtable discussions. Anchorage is going to do that by district. So I'm interested to see how that plays out. I'll go tomorrow. The other town halls, I don't know if you're referring to, Mike, because the national ones that have been getting a lot of press, and people are fairly what I call wee-weed up about it. Some people have alleged that they're paid. I allege they're pissed. Some of them are running from them. Some of them are showing up and just talking about how mean people are. Some people are having them and closing the doors and closing the curtains and inviting small groups in and calling them a town hall. So that's my overview.
Zaz, any observation from your perspective?
I don't have personal observations. I know that my colleagues have been trying to track our Congress people just because there has been such a high national interest in these town hall meetings. And I am not sure about everybody. I know that Sullivan had or is having an event in Fairbanks, I think, sort of a private event that was or is expected to be protested. And then Don Young, Mark, were you there? There was a petroleum club event last night. Today it's Friday morning, so this was Thursday.
I was not there.
Okay. Thursday evening. I don't know how that went.
So the ones that Sullivan has had, he had two audiences in Anchorage, and they were closed events. One was for the union and one was to the only members of the chamber.
And they sent the press out of the room too.
Right. And they had someone in Fairbanks had a mock event for him and put up his face on a chair and held their own town hall, which is creative.
Very creative. I also want to point out that in my search for information about all of this, I happened to be in Anchorage. And when Senator Sullivan went to the Petroleum Club to speak there, I was able to talk to a few of the people that gathered outside in protest. Mm-hmm. This was a reasonably well-organized group. They had signs, et cetera. And as the group wandered around all sides of the building, and you could see into the area where the speech was going and the meeting was happening, someone came over and closed the blinds slowly, so that it was a very clear suggestion that no, we don't want you to see, or we don't want who's ever in here to see
can't
what's
even
happening
peek.
Outside. No, we don't want to have that happen. But it was a robust crowd that was reported in the newspaper as being around 40. The TV people were there. I'd say it was a minimum of 40. When I was there for a period of time and asking people how they heard about it, et cetera, I thought that was the most interesting thing. This was once again, a social media organized event. When people learned about it on Facebook, they weren't not all necessarily tied in directly to the groups that were organizing these things, either on a national or statewide basis. They had heard about it and they came down and they were willing to speak and hold a sign.
Well, and just because it's organized, I think this is where we get a little bit tempted to say things like paid and not real. Just because it's organized does not mean it's not real or organic. And that it's been kind of surprising to me, especially after the Tea Party went down a similar path in, what was it, 2009, I guess.
Good point.
I remember Obama's press secretary getting out in front of the cameras and saying, oh, it's all paid stuff. I think they called it astroturfing. And now the Republicans appear to be making the same kind of mistake. This is, there's certainly an element of higher power, higher organization, but really when you get down to it, the organizing is at the grassroots level through Facebook and social media. So what we're seeing is really a democracy in action. It's just unfortunate that it's not more consistent, and it takes a perceived political cataclysm like the election of Donald Trump to get people fired up. But I would say at the end of the day, it's just really democracy in action.
And well, the Women's March was a good example of that too. Grassroots, nobody was paid, all social media. And arguably the biggest demonstration that's ever been held. These town hall meetings, Donald Trump isn't having meetings. He's having rallies, campaign rallies, which is interesting after 29 days in office. But the town hall meetings are elected officials, and they're being told to do their job. And people are dissatisfied for not just one purpose. They're dissatisfied on a whole host of issues, LGBT issues, education, funding. This is all the issues hitting. I think the Tea Parties were a little more focused on budget deficits, gun rights, and hate for Planned Parenthood. I don't know if it reached beyond those issues. I think this one with immigration, it could be said there's more of a buffet of people upset.
Well, let me ask this question, because all of you are knowledgeable in the sense that you've had experience observing a variety of forums, the professional forums, whether it's what's happening in Juneau in a legislative committee meeting or on the floor, either of the houses, or if you've been at an assembly meeting. And I'm wondering if it's one of those cases of be careful what you ask for. We have had over the years a bemoaning of the participation rate being so dismal. And now we're faced with a very interesting question as people say, okay, maybe I've asked and people have responded. Because when everybody comes in, you realize that the structures that we have, an assembly meeting or even a town hall meeting, when you have a large number of participants who've come out to say something and be there, it changes everything. When you're used to having a small meeting where a few people representing groups and
they're
a few
all
other
saying
people
the same
out,
thing.
But when you have a large number of people and they all have something happening, we've seen that most interesting, I think, both the Anchorage Assembly and the Borough Assembly. When you get a hot topic, you fill that place to overflowing, and you got everybody wants to talk, et cetera. But when that becomes an everyday experience on all these issues, have to, I think you have to look at the processes. Any comment about that observation?
How about you, Zaz?
Well, boy, that's a tough one because, I mean, that's democracy, whether you're at the Mattsu Assembly or at a town hall forum in Indiana. It's you know, as a reporter covering these events, as a member of the public who goes for an LID in their neighborhood and the meeting ends up kind of getting hijacked by marijuana land use regs. I mean, Terry makes a point that, you know, if you've got 100 people who come out very emotional saying mostly the same thing, you know, as a policymaker, and I'm just talking about assembly meetings now, as a policymaker, what you want to hear is, how does this apply to code? You know, I want to make my decision based on the regulations I've sworn to uphold for the public. And instead, you have a lot of emotional testimony. I think it's easy if you are on a different, if you're at the meeting to resolve a different issue that's now getting buried on the agenda, it can be pretty frustrating. But that's how the process works in the town hall meetings as well. You know, normally these are pretty staid events, and they are turning into protests. That is a function of our leadership, our kind of the direction our country is going right now, and the frustration among some that their voices aren't being heard. I don't know if that's the most effective way to be heard, but it's obviously it's making news. And speaking of which, it's Friday morning, so this is breaking now, but apparently the president's press secretary has barred the New York Times, CNN, maybe a few other outlets from a press briefing this morning, which is pretty much unheard of.
But did other
Breitbart News is in. One American News Network, Washington Times, along with ABC, CBS, Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg, and Fox were allowed in.
Wow.
Whoa. For now.
Yeah.
Whoa. Well, Bannon said yesterday that relations with the press would get worse, and he was very emphatic about it. So
he must have known this was coming.
Well, that will be something. Obviously, it seems at this point to be a very significant thing to narrow the number of people that are allowed to come in and listen to what is being said. One of the other aspects of this whole process, though, is the variety of voices that appear to be speaking about issues that are under consideration or actions that are being taken by the administration, particularly, I think, at the national level. I think looking at the Secretary of State and another official going to Mexico, talking with the President of Mexico. Meanwhile, comments coming out of Washington seem to be different than what they were saying. This is one example of a continuing question about, is there coordination? Or is there a lack of identification about what really is intended from the national level?
Well, you know, I think it's sort of symptomatic of a campaign continuing to go on. There's an old, you know, saying that if you control the message, you control the campaign. And I think that's what they're continuing to do, is trying to control the message by just having the messengers they want to deal with. And I think, just going back to what Zaz was so wisely putting about town halls, those town halls, at least locally and on a statewide, used to be, you'd go to them, and a lot of them would just be the supporters of those legislators, almost like they had put out personal invitations to have people come up and support their ideology or their point of view. There weren't really a lot of people challenging what they had to say. It was a comfortable environment for them. Now that tide has turned, and now you're getting people that are showing up and they're questioning what people are doing, how they're doing their job, how they're spending their money. They want specifics. They want action. They're calling on them on some of their statements. And that's a very, that takes away the echo chamber. And that puts people in a really hard place to be. And they, because they need, just like Mr. Trump needs admiration from his fans, why he keeps having campaign things, why he's at the big Republican thing today, is because he needs to hear the same voices to reinforce him, to keep his ego going. And I think it trickles down to other lawmakers. And so it's going to be very interesting to see when everybody, this will happen for a while, and something will break, the dam will break, and you just don't turn your back on big news publications like the New York Times and Wall Street, or, you know, did they say Wall Street Journal was part of that?
No.
They've been mad at them,
they
too.
They were allowed in.
They were allowed in. So, Washington yeah. Post was not, though?
The Post isn't mentioned.
Not mentioned. Okay, somewhere in limbo.
Yeah, but there are
Times and AP boycotted. They were invited in and chose
not to. Oh, good.
Yeah.
So if they start, you know, holding each other's back and start to, hopefully they'll keep covering for each other, that it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
So the idea mm-hmm. That the administration thinks that this is, you know, punitive and might make other outlets, get in line, so to speak, is ridiculous. I think they've miscalculated in a huge way.
Well, it's a patriotic way of doing things. Don't piss daddy off. Or don't piss mommy
let
off.
Let us go. Let us shift then, because we could go on about this, and that's the danger of being sucked into talking on and on. We have some other things happening. There were two in particular that I wanted to bring to the fore. One, I believe that Zaz has been following. We certainly have the first results. A two-week time for a committee meeting that's talking about something important to Alaskans, and that's fish. The most recently looking at the dip net issue about how to change dip netting in the Cook Inlet. Zaz, do you have any summary sense of where things are at the present time?
Boy, I don't. I've been following Board of Game, which is wrapping up this week in Fairbanks on the Denali Wolf proposal, and another reporter at the paper, Susanna Caldwell, is covering the Board of Fish.
Okay.
How
are things going with wolves? Maybe we could get a quick summary idea about what's happening up there, and then I have some information about the fish.
Oh, good. The Board of Game, I believe, is going to take up two separate proposals for a wolf buffer on state lands next to Denali National Park. I think they're going to do that today, so there should be a decision today. One is a National Park Service proposal for a temporary closure on hunting and trapping, and the other is two nonprofits proposing year-round closure. And it's all in the context of this state-federal battle over predator control. There have been kind of hints that the board is going to be very mindful of not giving in too much to the Park Service right now, given the legal action that's ongoing and the tug of war over predator control and who should control how we deal with our wolves and bears.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that. Let's switch to the fish issue. This has been something that comes really in as an important topic for the Borough Assembly. The Borough Assembly meeting, in fact, last Tuesday had mention of this. The borough itself has been careful to put out that this is a significant series of questions that are being looked at. Remind listeners and myself, there was a corridor established that allowed fish to come up to the top of the Cook Inlet. And there's been some suggestion that that has been helpful in allowing people who are fishing here to get fish. That corridor is just one of a number of topics that are being considered. The other one, the one that has been reported upon most recently that seems to also be a very, very heated topic, has to do with changing the dip netting that many people from the valley are involved with when they go down to the Kenai. And there are significant changes being proposed about how long the dip netting can be open, what kind of areas will be open, et cetera, et cetera. So this meeting is going to go on, as I understand, for a couple of weeks. And it will affect people's lives in a dramatic way as we come along. And we'll be, I'm sure, talking about it. Just begun. I can only underline that the borough is very, very interested in what happens there. They have, and I think Terry knows quite well, they have always looked to build an expertise by having people on local committees that know what to say and know what's happening.
Yeah, they have a really strong board there. They've been seated for a while. They've been mentored pretty well by a couple of assembly people as well as administration. So there's a lot on the line for the borough. They're pretty much all in on this fish board meeting.
Okay, now I have two. I have two things that are, come under the category of surprising. Number one, it's just I read this and I said, okay, let me look at this over again. Apparently, in the state legislature in the House, there was a member of the Republican minority that proposed eliminating the per diem, the reduced per diem that two House members receive. They live in Juneau, and they were receiving a somewhat reduced amount. And when that proposal was made, the comeback from the House majority was, why stop there? Let us just have everybody have that amount mm-hmm. reduced. And the total, by the way, as I saw it, it means that the individual member would get just under $15,000 less per wow. year, for a total of somewhere in the neighborhood of just under $900,000 that would be saved. The House unanimously agreed to move this forward. The Senate has yet to be heard, to my knowledge. This is a pretty dramatic thing in my mind. Any comments, Mark?
Well, it certainly addresses something that has been a sore spot with a lot of people for a long time. You could make the argument that $850,000 or whatever it is a drop in the bucket compared to the size of the budget deficit. And it is, but it doesn't change that the legislature has been under fire for not holding itself accountable financially in the same way that it has held, say, the governor's feet to the fire. So this is a good move by the legislature to appear to be holding itself accountable for costs too. Per diems have been a sore spot for such a long time, and especially since the legislature, they're the only ones who get the federal rate. Everybody else in state government from the governor down gets a lesser state rate. So it's really been a sore spot. It has looked like self-interest on the part of the legislature to initially, vote themselves the bigger per diem. So to finally address it, I think, is a good thing.
Okay.
And staff has never gotten any per diem. So even staff that go to Juneau to work with them over the course of the session don't get any subsidy. They just get their wages. Yeah,
Which are pretty high.
That's true. But I will say that, and they get it when they're here too, so it should even out. I have heard some arguments, I think mostly from Sam Keto and Juneau, that part of the per diem is because, they are basically can't work year-round. They have to supplement their year-round work because we are a citizen legislature. So I think that has been an argument for the Juneau legislators. But I think so, too. Everybody has to feel the pain. And I think that's the most important thing. You can't be asking people, school districts, to take money out of education, a kindergartner who doesn't ever get those years back, and not have grown-ups be acting like grown-ups and take a cut, too.
Okay. So second surprising, only different location. I'm talking about Washington, D.C., where the grown-ups have stepped forward, and the most grown-up of them all, our Representative Don Young. Once again in the news with the Cannabis Coalition, that is working to ensure that those states that have moved forward for recreational and medicinal use of marijuana are allowed to continue on. And this comes up once again because seeping out of the White House and the administration is the suggestion, maybe a little bit more than that, that there be a hard line taken, particularly given the Attorney General Sessions' positions in the past on marijuana. Terry.
Oh, and the irony, they're going to go on with the privatization of jails. So is there a correlation there? Yeah, I mean, they're going to end up putting a lot more people in jail if they are going to take a hard line on what's been pretty much passed in several states now.
Absolutely. The private prison industry has been, I believe, the top lobbyist against relaxing the marijuana laws. So, yeah, there's definitely a correlation there.
And there shouldn't be any big shock. I mean, Jeff Sessions all along has been hard-nosed on this, and mm-hmm. he's the one that's calling calling what's going to happen. So it'll be interesting.
It's also ironic, given the number of folks in the administration who are quick to shout state rights about any other number of issues.
Right. Okay.
And the bankers have to be upset, too. There's a lot of money floating around that's not sitting in their banks.
Mm-hmm.
It's sitting, you know, somewhere, you know, not helping serve them.
So in the meantime, what we have is a continuing beginning discussion about how to handle the big part of this whole session, coming up with a balanced budget. I know that Senator Don Levy from the Valley here has once again proposed a way to do it by making $1 billion in cuts. I have yet to see...
Unspecified cuts.
I have yet to see specified what that means. We earlier just mentioned $860,000. Oh, yes, that moves us along. But $860,000 is a small percentage of $1 billion, as I remember. And the rest of it seems to still be MIA. Any comments from any of you about that before we finish up here?
Don Levy needs to put up some specifics to his plan. It's way too late in the game to keep pushing vague ideas about dollar value cuts. If he's not going to do it, the people who serve alongside him and who apparently seem to be lining up in support of him ought to insist that he flesh it out a little more and quickly.
Okay, that's probably the best summary I can think of. Well, the snow still continues to fall, and I want to thank Zaz Hollander. Thank you, Zaz, for being here today.
Thank you all. Good to be here.
And I want to thank the two people here in the studio, Terry Snyder and Mark Kelsey, both of you for being able to get through the snow and be here. Thank you.
Always
both.
A pleasure.
All right, Mike. Have a good
week. Okay, we'll be back next week for another edition of Valley Edition.